Clustered Conversations. Clustered Conversations. By Weka.
Hello and welcome to Clustered Conversations. I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
So welcome back. And today we have a very special guest. We have Nilesh, who is our, what are you now? Chief of Product, I believe they call you.
Well, yeah, they call it Chief Product Officer.
Wow, that's a that's a fancy term, Nisha.
That's a fancy title to say I'm a product geek.
Nilesh comes with a rich history and background in storage. We've worked together in the past, and you know this is our second time around together. So why don't you tell us, like, where did you come from? I mean, what did you begin, and how did you get here?
Who is Nilesh?
Who is Nilesh?
All right. Thanks, guys, and I'm really excited about being a part of this podcast. And I think I've kept up with you guys, and there's some amazing conversations. And what I found fascinating is how the industry is evolving, and the conversations you guys are touching upon is touching upon that as well. But from my brief history, you know, I've been about 30 plus years now. I'm aging myself, 30 plus years in the industry. I was lucky enough to start at Intel in the early days of Intel, 1991. And I led through my 10 years there. I led Pentium product management, Itanium, IA64, and had a great run there and learned a lot. And I think some of the learnings
Were those dancing clean suit guys? Were they your idea?
I wasn't doing marketing, but there were some other geniuses there that came up with this boing about Intel Inside and then dancing.
I love those. Those are great ads. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I think that was pretty amazing. I think it reminds me of what we are trying to do with here with our Purple Bunnies too. So it's pretty fascinating. I think Intel was actually a formative years in terms of how to lead a transformation, how to lead the industry in a certain way of thinking and driving a particular agenda in terms of from a business needs and where the industry is heading towards. Of course, Intel has fallen behind a bit, but I will leave it for now. Then I had an opportunity to be part of a couple of startups where I learned hard way how hard it is to really take a fantastic idea and take it to market. And dot-com bursting didn't help either. But then from there, I actually ended up joining NetApp. In the time when NetApp was transitioning from being a NAS filer company to an enterprise storage company, and a combination of NetApp adding more, holistic enterprise functionality and SAN feature set, block feature set, and so on. And so that was a fascinating experience. Again, how do we lead during the transition, win during the transition, and come out ahead and be almost like a de facto standard for certain transformative trends like virtualization in the case of NetApp. But that was about 2004 to 2012-ish. So good 9-10 years run there. Saw a lot of different things, systems business, NAS, the file system application business, and then a lot of data center platform integration, more solution delivery around big data analytics and so on.
And you worked there with one of our previous guests, right? And you guys worked together on one of the cool projects at NetApp, which was the
Flash. Steve Miller, my good friend. So fascinating. Yes, Steve and I entered, literally wrote up the first Flash product idea on the back of a napkin, and we said, "What would we call it?" And we call it Performance Acceleration Module, PAM. And that was actually a first, meaningful larger enterprise use case for Flash before NetApp kind of went to sleep and other people took on the whole Flash array market.
It was Flash in front of SATA and Flash in front of SAS, and it actually did a great job of accelerating our performance back then. It was a really cool concept.
That is true.
Did you keep that napkin, though?
that napkin turned into an actual PRD for a long time, and then I don't know what happened to that napkin. But I think again, those are some good learning experiences where sometimes understanding the customer's problems deeper and taking a non-conventional approach to solving those problems takes you further. It did, as I said, it did solve some of the problems that I was facing, but then it was not thought through holistically by the time we turned into, you know, a broader Flash-based use cases that were evolving.
Right.
To be honest, from there on, I actually felt that I'm done with data and storage and decided to go away from it for a while. And then a couple of other companies leading into Palo Alto Networks, then I decided to go into more cybersecurity. And I ran Palo Alto Networks network firewall business. Again, a large, fast-growing platform business there. And very interesting approach and learned, again, a lot there, from both from a product perspective, but also how do you drive an alternative way of solving some of the customer's problem. And in fact, there is a lot of similarities that I've found that we have taken here at Weka that matches that. But anyway, so my journey ended there in Palo Alto Networks about a couple of years ago, and then I spent a kind of detour into the UAE. I moved my family there with my wife and I, with being empty nesters, and that was a cybersecurity business there that I was part of. And
that's a big change.
Yeah, no, that was a big change, but it was a, you know, kind of a life event when you had two of my kids, one of the younger one daughter, moving to the college and being an empty nester, and this opportunity just came from nowhere. I said, let's try something different, and it was a fascinating experience. But anyway, so that's my journey. That's where I've been to. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm starting the half nest out this year, and then 2 years from now, I'll catch up to you.
All right. Well, yeah, no, it's a milestone.
I've got a ways to go.
He's got a long way to go. So cool.
I'm just waiting for them to start paying rent.
So, I mean, how do you like Weka? I mean, what made you come to Weka? I mean, for me, it was I came to storage again after saying I'd never do storage again because it was really interesting.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where I was. You know, I was the only opportunity that I was even considered. I was not considering anything new at that time. I was having a good time in the UAE. And then I got approached by Amit Pandey, who's our executive chairman, and said, Nilesh, and I know him from my NetApp days, and said, hey, you guys, you need to hear this story about Weka. And I said, what is Weka? And then told me about, hey, this is one of these high-performance platform company doing amazing job. I said, no, I've heard about those parallel file system stuff in the past, and I know there's a big graveyard of those companies, and I just don't want to be dealing with that. And he said, no, there's a different story here. You need to hear me out. And so he told me about it. I decided to stop by on my trip back to the U.S. for 2 weeks. I was here, and I spent a weekend with Liran. And I kid you not, I think the an-hour one-on-one was introductory one-on-one became five-hour meeting. And in that 5 hours, we both came, a few things we agreed to. One thing was none of us wanted to come back into the data or storage market. Right. And he said why he did it. And then we also spent a lot of time talking about fundamental problems that has been hurting the last 30 years of storage stack. And so that assertion led us to the remaining 4 hours of discussion about the four corner chart that we standardized back at NetApp in terms of the workloads that are getting stretching the storage or data layer into four different corners: IOPS performance, small files, large files and throughput, and the cost and capacity. And the only answer every company, large company, small company, had was to pick one of the four. And then try to, EMC fill the rest with the portfolio approach. NetApp came too late to it. And in fact, I was part of the two acquisitions we drove out of NASBU, one of Engineo for high-performance IOMS-oriented workload, and Storage Grid Bycast for capacity and content storage and file and object. And again, they had to take three products to cover that the use cases that were evolving fast. But again, that posed the fundamental problems that the last 30 years of data stack and storage stack have been facing. And when I mentioned that problem statement, Liran said, no, we covered all. I said, bullshit. And he said, no, let me walk you through. And then we literally walked through the entire stack in terms of how we have done that. And then I said, you know what? This is very fascinating. I'm excited about it because you're not focused on storage problem. You are focused on solving the accelerated compute problem,
right?
Which is looking at the data layer problem from an upside down perspective. And I think that that actually, you know, really made me very excited about what Weka is up to. And so that's how I ended up, you know, getting very curious about it, learned a bit, lot more about it after talking to Maurer. We had two meetings with Maurer and Doug Deeper there, and he obviously wanted to make sure that this guy gets it. And, and yeah, so now 5-6 months into it, and I'm here.
That's great. I mean, it's made a big difference. It's awesome. Nice to see us kind of streamlining our product development process, right? The way we decide on what we want to build, how we want to get to market, how we, what features we're looking for, what customers we need to talk to, and what, you know, what segments we're trying to make happy, right?
I think it's a time-proven journey, and you can read books, you can go to the classes and to learn about product management, and there are lots of stuff happening out there. But I think you have to have gone through the difficulty of choosing the right answer among, it's almost like a threading needle on one end. So in my view, there are at least four dimensions that I always think about before deciding where do we go. And I guess sometimes it sounds cliches, but I think it's also, you have to really practice it and come back to it in a true fashion. One is you have to know why you are even in the business. What customer problems are you solving? And you have to think about in both dimensions. What is the larger fabric you're painting on from a market and trends and larger growing problem, which is where the evolving problems are happening, and keeping that in mind, and then also tune into more specific, what is the current problem the customers are probably trying to solve. It might be a performance issue, a scale issue, or a specific feature set, but all that needs to add up to where you're going next from a product strategy perspective. So keeping that ultimate product strategy and business outcome in mind is extremely important, and that has to be your starting point. Then you combine that with saying, okay, what are some of the pain points your existing customers have in terms of your near-term opportunities? So balance that with it. Then you have some of the incoming from the engineers, and I love working with very hungry and innovative engineers who take pride in solving some really difficult problems and don't let it go until they solve it. And I feel really lucky that we have that type of engineering skill set and mindset in Maurer and Nir and many others in the team there, that they are really tackling some serious problems. Anytime we come up with a problem, they have a unique, broader, very scalable and out of the normal way of solving those problems. And so part of the requirement comes from them, and part of it is coming from some of the technical debts and supportability. And, you know, we need to make sure that we are fitting well into customers' environment from operational ease and so on. So, you know, it's a more 360-degree perspective. And whether you're running on a 2-week sprint or a three-month sprint cycle or a 12-month waterfall, these principles, you have to come back to it. And then once you have the list of priorities from there, then you need to make sure that the statement that I keep taking on every notebook I write, on the first page I write, you know, what customer problem are you solving better than anybody else, and do it profitably.
And it's fun to watch these guys, the engineers, especially at Weka, the work. They really think in parallel. They don't think of it as a single box solution or, you know, a one client solution. They're looking at how I can make this work across a huge infrastructure with trillions of files and hundreds of clients and everyone hitting the system at the same time.
Yeah. That's a great point. And I think, some of the decisions we have made, strategic decisions we have made, and it's very easy to walk away from those strategic decisions. Number one is we want to be software-only play. Being a software play in a data layer, when you have a huge ecosystem up your stack and below your where you stand, it's a huge burden you are taking on. And so it requires the architectural sophistication and a commitment to making sure that we are driving to a certain level of currency to be part of a first-class citizen of that ecosystem. And that is where the ingenuity and innovation around how our engineers are thinking about the problem comes into play. And I see that play out day after days, where they have solved the problem in a, such a sophisticated way that we don't have to go back and redo or custom build for one or the other ecosystem partners. Whereas the platform is written in a way that it truly behaves like a platform, and it's mostly a quick currency check and qualification cycle that allows us to keep up with the ecosystem. And there are times where we'll have to go deeper and make few changes and so on. But otherwise, I think, again, this is the power of our platform and the way that our engineers have architected it. It's a generation. I call it a generational platform, because the way we have solved the problem is going to, last for at least a full generation, probably 20 to 30 years before somebody feels that this does not meet the need of what they're trying to do. We don't know what that would
be. There's going to be some significant underlying changes to the compute world as a whole for Weka and the way it works and the way it integrates with really the standards of the industry, with x86, with PCI Express, with NVMe, with Ethernet or InfiniBand, TCP/IP, all that sort of thing. Like, all of those standards would have to change at their core to be something entirely different for Weka to no longer really be feasible.
Exactly. And I think what you're talking about and is a very important point, because what you have seen is, even though when you look at what happened in 1990 and what's happening now, that looks drastically different in terms of whether with the ATM networks to where we are today, where Ethernet, people never took it seriously, to now Ethernet runs the entire digitized economy out there and so on, right? So there's a transformational change like that, but it all happened incrementally. And it hasn't been something like Weka, which has taken the problem upside down. And I'll tell you about how I feel about it. The storage and other I/O, so I look at where we are at a data layer closer to the application, and any, we look down, and there's a networking stack and data stack, storage stack underneath that. All those are incrementally improving. There is a point solution fixes, whether it's the PAM card we did in 2009, or whether we did a flash array, or some of the amazing flash-based products. I think what some of other industry players like Pure and even other VAS and others are doing, they're really leveraging commodity technology and improving upon it. So I guess, one of the big problem, or at least the innovation over the last 30 years, particularly looking down in the storage stack, has been solving this problem of the slow media. And there were specific innovations, whether it's the I/O technology or media technology, were specifically solving a point problem. It's not until what Weka is doing, which is really solving the compute problem. And the big part of the puzzle we have solved with our data layer is, how do we keep the GPUs and CPU accelerated computing infrastructure utilized to the fullest, and only do storage functions and data layer downward looking functions that are required to deliver against those workload requirements. And that actually allowed us to architect the data layer in a very unique way that is really delivering against the business needs of the workloads, whether it's your scientific computing or AIML for some of the business needs that you're driving towards. But I think it's been, we were talking about the generational transformation, and it required us to do something along this line to be able to address the next emerging set of challenges around data. And that's what I got fascinated and excited about in terms of how we are solving those problems.
Awesome. That's fun to see that, we are looking at things differently. We're not just coming at it from a storage perspective, even though some of our guys do have a storage background. They're looking at it, how to solve the problem of the users more than the problem that the storage admins have, which is a lot of the storage companies kind of concentrate on.
That's right, because I think everyone and all of us read about the data problems, and initially in the last 10, 15, 20 years was this conversation on data at scale and exabyte of data, exascale data set that people will be hard to manage and so on. So it was a data management problem, people talked about deriving value from the data, the business value, and you know, the whole AI ML and other analytics workloads started to emerge, but it was not, and that whole data, you know, creating the value of the data discussion happened at a layer about the data layer or the storage layer, as we know, as we talk about sometimes synonymously.
Right.
However, I think the approach we have taken in terms of being closer to the compute and being aware of the workload behavior and so on allows us to participate in understanding the data value and help with that whole problem statement. And that is where I think, as you said, you know, where do we go from a roadmap perspective? It's not about the data layout and protocol and how platform best delivers that. Of course, we gain tremendous performance, you know, 10x, 20x benefits in performance and scale based on optimizing the data layer to keep the compute occupied. But along the way, the value we create around our insight into the metadata and what we can do with metadata is really the where the next major problem we'll be able to solve. Is, you know, once we consolidate some of the data layer functions and the storage layer functions, I think there is an opportunity for us to be truly transformative in helping address those data monetization, data intelligence, data cataloging kind of problems that is really being part of the AI ops, ML ops, and data ops pipeline, helping consolidate that, make them efficient. And because, you know, if you look at, if you listen to a lot of industry pundits and the people who have built their stack over the last 10, 20 years, they will still be talking about siloed deployment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we are able to do, because we have solved the problem more fundamentally at a data layer between small files and large files, IOPS or low latency versus throughput, it's a single platform architecture and the power of the architecture we have that will, and then you combine on top of that the metadata intelligence, and that is what will allow us to really completely append some of the you know, workflows and pipelines and really make them extremely efficient. And that's what actually I get really excited about. And then the third element about the value that I see really is that taking those two aspects and apply our ability to build the data mobility, because we are building a, such a modular chunk, and the ability to move data around between cloud and on-prem and the simplicity of that architecture really addresses the data access problem as well. So I think, you know, from a roadmap perspective, I look at it from a three dimension and how we are thinking about it. You know, at a data layer where we are sitting, we have addressed and proven ourselves again and again around solving the traditional storage problems. And we have done that better than anybody else. And the power of the architecture we have. I think the data mobility, and as the you know, enterprise workloads migrate to cloud, that is the problem we are solving for them today. And I think, as you're going to see, some of the recent announcement we did and all that is really help us get there. And it is, again, the power of our architecture that allows us to get that data mobility efficiently delivered, and then making sure that we deliver the same value on-prem in the cloud because of our, you know, cloud-native architecture. But then taking the next step further, if you look at us a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, you will see us participating and consolidating the AIML workflows and pipelines in a much more native fashion by being tightly integrated into those environment. And it will be natural to us because we see data coming into us through ingest, and we are also the one helping GPUs to process them, and we are the one transporting the data or helping transport the data across the wire onto the cloud or edge and so on. And along the way, the common denominator we have is the intelligence and the metadata and what the data is all about. And so we should be able to do an amazing job at addressing those inefficiencies. And that's what actually I get, you know, if you look at, if you ask about where is the next major exciting innovation and opportunities we have to completely deliver, continue to deliver tremendous value to the customer and where the new problems are evolving to, you know, I think I find that that is going to be the next major area. And that will, in a way, will consolidate some of the many different disparate products and solution stack that people and customers are deploying today, and help us, you know, simplify that for our customers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the data mobility has always been, and data movement is always the biggest stone to move in any sort of data platform. How do you get access to all this information that you have to where it needs to be in order for something to actually useful to happen with it? And that's especially true when you've coming from a, you know, sort of a more legacy standpoint of having, you know, on-prem data center where you've got a bunch of storage appliances and maybe migrating to and from the cloud, or you need to be able to burst up into the cloud and moving that data back and forth. And more importantly, moving the new insights that you just generated from that old data, you know, maybe doing a copy is not necessarily too challenging and difficult, but now you've just gotten some new data. Where does that live? Where does that now go? If instead you have, you know, a single repository, a single namespace, a federated file system that all of your systems, be they in cloud or in multi-clouds or on-prem, all access the same data at the same time with the same metadata, much more interesting, much more powerful, and definitely a big change, a big opportunity to be had if we can solve that.
Absolutely.
Correct. And I think that's that is, as you mentioned, mobility part of it. If the data is designed, if it's assumed to be always going to be mobile and always going to be available for application, and you are architecting the solution so that it is always designed to be accessible to anybody, anywhere, anytime, you are not tying it to locking down to a particular storage infrastructure layer. And I think some of those aspects, the fact that our metadata always lives on at the closest to the compute layer, where it allows us to make the access instantaneous. And many times when you have other band-aid solutions the industry got used to, today, for example, if you want to really add value to the data by understanding the metadata, enriching the data, and so on, today there are sets of tools that have to be overlaid on top of the stored data in a more historical approach to addressing those customer problems. And I think it is more refreshing to see how we are looking at it, which is, you know, having metadata or data ops and are tied to the data itself and making, you know, made some automated decision. And that's why, you know, sometimes when we talk about zero tuning or auto tiering and all that, it's sounds like a science fiction or just a marketing buzzwords, but it is the power of the architecture and being closer to the you know, workload and knowing the intelligence of what metadata and what this data is all about and making decisions based on that upfront is really going to help simplify a lot of there are a lot of inefficiencies in the way data is being managed today. And I think we have opportunity to take out a lot of those inefficiencies and in turn truly deliver this kind of a 10x plus advantage on every aspects of the data pipeline that people are, you know, trying to optimize today.
Awesome. So we've talked about where Weka is, kind of what we're doing. So the question is really, what do you see in the industry that excites you that is coming next that we might be, you know, not necessarily what we're going to do next, but is there any kind of technology you're seeing or anything else that we can tie into and work well with?
Yeah, I think I believe that the whole, you know, again, this AI ML and the knowledge and intelligence that we are able to gather from the data, I think we are probably only scratching the surface in terms of what we are able to do with the you know, in data that is being collected. You know, I think we all talk about 5G, we talk about the, you know, sensors, IoTs that are everywhere. And I think it is those, you know, vision and experiences that people talk about and create some fancy videos around it as a concept, you know, bringing that to life, making some real-time decisions on the edge, built on the combination of the contextual awareness of the data that is being processed by the applications that are deployed either on the edge or in the core, doesn't matter where they are. I believe that is probably the next major place where I think there's going to be a lot of exciting use cases that are evolving, and a data layer that can keep up with that is what's going to be exciting for people to leverage and use. I mean, we hear talks about data lakes and so on, but again, a lake still has a boundary.
Right. And I think inlets.
Yeah. So I think that is that, in my point, my view is that we have to go about that beyond that. Yep. And a kind of a universal layer of data access that is instantly available and has a contextual understanding of what is being done at the point of the consumption, that we are being able to take actions. And I think there are elements of the metadata intelligence, some of the AIML software and applications that bring that intelligence to it, and making some real-time decisions, and being able to participate in that evolution of AIML and data usage on the edge, powered by 5G and then future 6G and so on, is, I think, going to be pretty exciting. And I think I find that we have the underpinning of what is required to be part of that journey over the next 5 years, 10 years, and the whole picture is going to look very different when we get there.
Yeah,
data universe.
In the time that Josh and I've been here, I mean, a lot of the questions around, big data sets in single places. And now a lot of the questions I'm getting from the reps and the SEs is, small data sets in lots of places, right? How do we collect all that data and centralize it? So yeah, the IoT part.
Exactly.
Yeah, the IoT part is really exploding, and we have to figure out, what we can do to help that.
I think there are two dimensions there. I agree. I think two sets of problems there. I think IoT is definitely lots of small sensor data. And, now talking about billions and potentially trillions of those data sets that are coming in. How do you process them? But equally exciting is computer vision and live feeds coming in, and people, machines making decisions about what they are seeing and helping predict stuff or taking action. And we are actually seeing some customers that we have been working with actually benefiting and delivering some amazing results, right? They're saying 10x and 20x improvement in their yield of the products and how quickly they're able to train their autonomous engine by just reviewing and analyzing the recorded data that they see from the street, from the cars. It's just fascinating.
We have others others at the end of a chip line checking out, whether or not the data, the stuff coming off the fab is actually good or not, right? We got guys doing QA with it, and also with panels. So it's pretty cool to see how our storage is being used in all these different industries to make decisions on its
right.
own.
And I think that's
exactly.
And I think that's you asked about what excites me. I think we are seeing the signs of those up successes and the productivity gains and business value it's creating for customers. Just think about that, to the next level. And the last thing I would say is really what truly makes my heart warm is really the kind of efficiency the technologies like Weka is able to deliver in terms of the, reducing the power consumption and footprint and so on. If we were to have a magic wand and the entire world's data layer were to change to Weka, I think we can kind of cut down the carbon footprint by half. Don't you think so?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, because we don't need as many spindles and servers and pieces to get to the same performance and IOPS that other people do. So we could reduce people are buying lots of space and paying for a lot of power to get to performance. So we can get in a smaller space with a lot less power.
That's very true. Yeah, I think exactly. I mean, we have customers benefiting from that today already, and I just believe that efficiency like what we are offering, and anybody who partner with us who are able to drive that kind of a sustainable technology solutions that can truly not amazing business value, but also have an amazing social value to how we are going to be able to impact the reduction in, you know, greenhouse. Yeah. I mean, this story can go in many different dimensions in terms of advantages and benefits. And I think that's what excites me in terms of what the future lays ahead, you know, as we combine the newer innovations around technology, our approach to managing those data layers in a very unique fashion and driving the next level of efficiency over the next period of time. I think it's a pretty fascinating, you know, exciting world out there.
Absolutely, man. Well, yeah. It's
thank
crazy.
You, Nilesh.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Appreciate,
that was a fantastic
conversation. Yeah, mm-hmm. Great.
No, I loved it. I think this, as I said, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to be part of a transformative, player, technology, product, platform like this. And I look forward to the journey with you guys. I think I'm so glad to have you guys together with me in the journey.
Awesome.
Oh, we appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Nilesh. And thank you, everybody that was listening for this episode. We, for Cluster Conversations, I'm Josh.
And I'm Bob.
And we will see you next time.
Have a good one.